Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us today. As mentioned, my name is Zach Kerr, and I began this research really as an interest in sports and concussions. And I have a great team that I worked with from UNC, from the Ohio State University, and from the Colorado School of Public Health. I have no relationships to disclosure. I'm going to move on to my presentation. As we all know, concussions have been a big news item in popular culture, in ESPN, and in news articles such as New York Post. I think it's when you start having reality TV shows such as Kim Kardashian talking about being concerned about being sustained after a celebrity boxing match. I think it's really come to say that concussions have made the big time. I'm not going to say whether or not I do watch Keeping Up with the Kardashians. I'll let you all figure it out yourself. But it is a big deal. Up to 3.8 million sports-related concussions have occurred annually in the United States. And there's been a lot of studies that have focused on concussions and what causes concussions and what concussions can lead to. And one of the growing fields related to concussions that have become of recent focus is biomechanics. And there, one way you can think about biomechanics is impact location, or the area to which the concussive impact has occurred. And a lot of researchers really explored these various ways in which we can look at the impact location. And I'm going to run through a couple of these here in a second. So one of the first methods is called the Head Impact Telemetry System, or HITS for short. And as you can see, there's a picture of our fearless leader, Kevin Guskowitz, from the Traumatic Brain Injury Center, holding up one of the UNC football helmets that is used by our football team in Chapel Hill. What I circled around there are these small little round sensors that actually look at the linear and rotational accelerations for every impact that has occurred by that player which is wearing that helmet. So from that, we can get an idea of the subconcussive and the concussive impacts that are occurring. The setback to this is that, is that each of those helmets and the devices utilized cost up to $1,500. So for a high school or Pop Warner Sports League, it's not really a viable option economically. There's also video reviews where you can go back to video footage and look at the impact of location, but there is a lack of data, particularly with being able to ascertain where the impact locations occurred, because there's criteria such as having two clear angles or undeniable video proof. And so in two previous studies, we have a low number or low percentage of concussions that were able to have impact location looked at, ranging from 17 to 45%. One of the purposes we wanted to look at with this study was to kind of look at what's been established and find a way we can investigate impact location over time with a set injury surveillance system. And this surveillance system is Don Comstock's National High School Sports Related Injury Surveillance System, otherwise known as High School Rio. And it's an internet-based sports injury surveillance system that now has 5 years of data with impact location. And it's really great because the data is being collected and provided by athletic trainers who are on field working with these high school athletes. And it's also a pretty low-cost method compared to using the HITS system. So the research aim for this project was to describe the epidemiology of concussions in high school football in the United States by impact location, and specifically estimate the incidence and rates of concussions occurring, the variations in symptomology, symptom resolution time, and return to play based upon these impact locations, and last, explore the injury mechanism and head position during injury. So as I mentioned, our methods, our data set we're using is the High School Rio convenience sample of National Athletic Trainer Association affiliated high school athletic trainers who had a valid email address. And this system is really great. You, as an athletic trainer, can go in on a weekly basis and log in on this website, what injuries occurred during that week, as well as what sort of athletic exposures occurred. And I will define both of those here in just a second. Injuries were defined as resulting from participation in school-sanctioned practice and competitions that required medical attention, and an athletic exposure is pretty much a common denominator used in sports injury research, which is saying one athlete's participation in one athletic practice or competition. So, for example, if you have basketball team, UNC's basketball team is 13 individuals, and one game would lead to 13 athletic exposures for those 13 individuals. They play two games, it becomes 26 athletic exposures, so on and so forth. Since the 2008-2009 school year, we've been able to get athletic trainers to tell us about the impact locations at which these concussions occurred. So these are categorized into back of the head, front of the head, side of the head, and top of the head. We also have information on the symptoms associated with concussions, the times for symptoms to resolve completely, the mechanism of injury, as well as the position of the head at contact. And some of the options for position of the head at contact are heads up, head down, or no flexion. And some of the symptoms that are included, I will have more in detail here in the next upcoming slides. So our case selection started off with 2,917 concussions that were reported by athletic trainers between these or during these 5 years of data collection from 2008 to 2013. We had to eliminate 17 of these because they didn't occur during practice or competition. And our main question was really focused at contact with players, between players, so player-player contact. So we really wanted to focus at public health preventable activities and actions that were caused from player-player contact. So we limited this to only those that were caused by player-player contact. So that did take out about 374 concussions as well. The last thing we had to regard for was having impact location not classified. So that again took out another 550 cases. So we're left with about 2,000 concussions in our data set, and it's 68% of the initial number of concussions that we ascertained through the surveillance system. So we are missing 32% of the data just because we don't have some of this information. So I want to really state that first and foremost as we go through the results, that there may be differences in what concussions were able to be classified by impact location and which ones couldn't be. Our statistical analyses were comprised of rates, which are the number of concussions over the number of athletic exposures, and our injury proportions, which in this case would be sort of a proxy for risk, because we don't have the actual number of athletes that were on each team. Instead, we have the number of injuries. So this data set is only looking at actual injury cases that occurred. So the injury proportion is sort of a proxy for a risk in that our numerator is the number of injuries that have a specific quality over the total number of the type of injury. So in this example, we are looking at what percentage of top of the head impact concussions resulted in loss of consciousness. And this injury proportion can then be used to cultivate an injury proportion ratio, or an IPR, which is sort of similar to a risk ratio or in the same context of a injury rate ratio. So our results. A slight majority of these concussions that were included in the data set occurred in competition, and the majority were from top of the head impacts. And I'm hoping that blue shows up well, especially for the front. Pretty much, you know, 57% were coming from front of the head impacts, and top of the head and back of the head made up a much smaller proportion. The rates over time, pretty constant in the top of the head and side of the top of the head and back of the head concussions, but a lot of the increased reporting was going on with front of the head and side of the head. On average, individuals were, our ATs reported 4.6 symptoms for each concussion that was included in the data set, and there were no statistically significant differences by the impact location. And as you can see, it's pretty constant throughout the four categories. Am I the only one hearing that hissing noise?
Yeah, okay. It shows up in this room every now and then. It'll go away.
Oh, there. So symptoms by impact location. I have a list here of some of the symptoms we looked at, and I only kept for the sake of your eyes, so you weren't kind of bamboozled with, you know, so much data there. Just some of the ones that I thought were the most interesting. So there are some variations in difficulty concentrating, confusion, disorientation, nausea, but the only statistically significant finding was loss of consciousness, with the top of the head impacts having a higher prevalence of loss of consciousness compared to the other three impact locations. And this is kind of a novel finding, because in the HIT system, the sensors in the helmets, there's been a finding that rotational impacts are, rotational acceleration is associated with side of the head impacts, and rotational acceleration is also associated with loss of consciousness. So based on that research, you'd expect that side of the head impacts would result in more loss of consciousness, but with our data here, we're seeing it's more with the top of the head. Some quick other things to just share. There was no association with symptom resolution time or return to play with impact location. And most of our injuries were occurring from tackling or being tackled during running plays and a heads-up position. The one thing I do want to note about head position is that top of the head impacts did have association with being head down, and this is a pretty staggering statistic where about 3/4 of those top of the head impacts that occurred during tackling, individuals were heads down. So, you know, what does all this data mean? From one end, from clinical perspectives, impact location may be of little value in predicting clinical outcomes when managing concussed high school football players because there really isn't no association with number of symptoms, prevalence of symptoms, resolution time, or return to play time with the impact location. On the other hand, I think it's really important to talk about this top of the head impacts issue, and as I mentioned, it's a novel finding, and this graph is really just that previous graph tilted on its side with the actual percentages there shown. And top of the head impacts, it's a big deal because there is the major risk of permanent paralysis and brain injuries, and we really need to revisit those heads-up techniques and think about the no-spearing rules that occurred from the late 1970s. At the same time, I want to mention that this is a various methodology compared to the hits or the video reviews, and we do have missing impact locations. So we do have those 32% of concussions without impact location data. And it is smaller, but I don't think it's missing completely at random, because if you have an athletic trainer who's on the side of the field, they may be more likely to see the impacts that occur to the front of the head are to the side of the head as compared to the top of the head. And it gets really complicated when you have, you know, with football, with all these huddles and impacts that occur right after the ball's in play, it may be hard for an athletic trainer to see some of these. So I think it's also important to also talk about the different populations. The collegiate athletes may be bigger and faster and may play more forcefully. So I think the main take-home message is that we really need to continue the surveillance of sports-related concussions and really investigate these protocols to obtain head impact locations and find this fine line between what is cost-restrictive and what's going to give us valid and reliable measures. As far as prevention, I think we really need to keep enforcing better rules that limit contact, continue educating players about safe contact, no spearing, and also look at the consistent use of properly fitted protective equipment, because what good is a helmet if it's not going to be worn properly? So with that, I do have slides for questions.